And welcome back. This is the News Roundup. I'm Sean Corcoran. We're discussing the top news stories of the week. And with me in our Woods Hole studio is George Brennan, a reporter at the Cape Cod Times and Cape Cod Online. Joining us on the phone is Tim Wood. He's the editor of the Cape Cod Chronicle. Hello, Tim.
Good morning, Sean.
Good morning to you. A story this week about some shorefront homes and some efforts to kind of protect those, but that was not approved by the Conservation Commission. What were they looking to do and what happened there?
There are three homeowners on Shore Road here in town whose properties front on Chatham Harbor, and they were seeking permission to build rock revetments along about a 600-foot stretch of shoreline, which is just north of the town fish pier. There's been some erosion in that area, primarily during storm events, particularly since the 2007 break in North Beach, which has made that area a little more vulnerable. And they've lost some sand from their coastal banks, and that's caused some of the bluff higher up to slump down. All of the homes are about 50, 60, maybe more feet away from the top of the bank, and members of the Conservation Commission said because the homes are still quite a ways from the top of the banks, they don't see that there's an imminent danger right now, so they don't see the need for revetments. And two of the houses were built after 1978, and state wetlands law prohibits revetments on properties where the homes were built after that date. Now, these properties have a combined value of more than $7 million. So these homeowners, who do think, by the way, that their homes are in imminent danger, they're not giving up. And they'll be back before the Conservation Commission in a few weeks with retooled proposals that obviously they hope will get a little better reception.
Okay. Let's talk about the pilot whale that made news out there on Harding's Beach.
Sure. This happened on Monday. Late Monday morning, we got a report of a whale stranded on Harding's Beach down here in West Chatham. And our reporter went out there and confirmed that there was indeed a pilot whale above the tide line. And he was there when rescue workers from the International Fund for Animal Welfare arrived to assess the situation. And throughout the day, they attempted a number of measures to try to save the creature, which turned out to be an adult 18-foot-long long-fin pilot whale, which weighed about, ultimately they found out, about 4,800 pounds. They covered the animal in blankets. They tried to get it closer to the water. They brought in a highway backhoe to try to move the animal, but it proved too heavy, actually, to move with a backhoe. And by the evening, the veterinarian on the scene determined that the animal could not be saved, and it was unfortunately euthanized. The next day, an excavator got out to the site, was able to lift the whale onto a flatbed truck, and it was taken to Woods Hole, where the IFAW crew were scheduled to do a necropsy to determine, if possible, why that pilot whale stranded.
Right. Well done there. Chatham's there's an artist from Chatham who's included in some controversy going on with the Virginia governor. How is that all working out?
Yeah, this was a kind of a curious situation. Earlier this month, the United States District Court in Virginia handed down an indictment against former Governor Bob McDonnell and his wife Maureen for allegedly illegally accepting about $165,000 in loans and gifts. And buried in this indictment was just a single line naming a painting and the artist Heather McKenzie. Well, this got onto the Rachel Maddow show, and McKenzie, who lives in Chatham, she's a former ABC TV photographer who grew up here and came back here after she retired to paint and live. She started getting phone calls, and she checked her records and indeed found that she had sold a painting showing seals in Chatham Harbor to Johnny Williams, who was the CEO of Star Scientific, who was indeed the person named in the indictment. And he also bought some prints of this painting. So now this painting is caught up in the lawsuit, and she's getting sort of a bump in exposure because of this. You know, she was mentioned on TV and on some websites, and hits on her website have skyrocketed. You know, I'm not sure yet if this is translated to more sales for her, but she's certainly happy with the exposure, and it's an interesting sort of journey of a painting purchased here in town and how it sort of made its way into a notorious situation down south.
All right, Tim. Excellent stories this week, as usual. Thank you very much. Tim Wood is the editor of the Cape Cod Chronicle. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you. And with me in our Woods Hole studio is George Brennan. George, let's talk about drones. You've been covering this issue. We have drones coming to the Cape for sure, and we have some legislators here in Massachusetts saying, hey, maybe we ought to have some rules in place.
That's right. We have Joint Base Cape Cod that's going to be a test site that's coming up. They were approved at the end of December, and you know, within a few months, we could have drones being tested out there. And so there's been a bill, actually, that's been before the legislature for more than a year now, but it's taking on more urgency now that this is happening here in Massachusetts. And the bill is backed by the ACLU, who says we need to have some privacy in place, some privacy rules in place before these start buzzing about. And there's a hearing coming up this coming week on February 5th before the Joint Committee on Transportation. Now, when this came up before on Beacon Hill, some of the legislators said, you know, isn't this really premature? We don't have drones right now flying in Massachusetts. And now it's happening. And now it's taking on that extra level of urgency. All across the United States, there are state legislatures that are looking into this. There's been as many as 8 laws passed. Last week, actually, New Jersey had passed a law, but Governor Chris Christie there pocket vetoed the legislation. And so that law went down there. But here in Massachusetts, they're saying, well, we'd like to have these in place before drones start flooding the skies here in Massachusetts.
And off Cape Cod, we saw a story in the paper this week about out west, what's known to be the first prosecution using drone evidence was used against a gentleman. Apparently, some cows had strayed onto his property, and he had refused to return them, and they gathered evidence about those cows using drones, and the judge accepted that evidence. So this is where we're heading.
That's one of the reasons that advocates want this legislation. There's a SWAT team here in Massachusetts that does have an application before the FAA to use drones in their investigations. So it's real.
It sure is. Joining us on the phone is Josh Balling. He's the assistant editor and director of digital content at the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning.
Let's talk about the island and the cemeteries running out of space.
Yes, the island's public cemeteries are nearly full, and town officials, in particular a cemetery work group, are really being pressed to try and find more space and address this issue before it becomes even larger of a problem, as some island families have expressed concern that the cost of private cemetery plots in the island's several private cemeteries is often beyond their reach, adding another layer of frustration, concern, and problems to an already difficult time. Only 2 of the town's 8 public cemeteries have any available plots left, one of them only for cremated remains. And the Nantucket Cemetery Commission has been working for the last couple years to see how much space is exactly available and how much to charge. Alan Reinhardt is the chairman of the town cemetery commission, and he says that the town has an obligation to provide cemetery space to its residents. Obviously, this Nantucket being an island, you can't necessarily go somewhere else if you don't even have that option, even if you wanted to, rather than have a loved one buried in their hometown. So they're looking at charging probably somewhere in the neighborhood of a third of what the private cemetery charges out here, and that for Nantucket would be about $800 per plot in the Pulpa Cemetery for cremated remains and about $1,000 to $1,200 in the Newtown Cemetery. As a lot of people who have been following Nantucket News know, in the last couple months, we're also without a funeral home. The Lewis family, who have operated a funeral home on the island in some way, shape, or form for over a century, closed it down in December, sold the property. Ricky Lewis, who had been the town's funeral director for a very long time, was 81. He's retiring, and now the funeral arrangements are being provided on Nantucket by off-island funeral homes, which adds another level of concern and bureaucracy to an already difficult time.
How does that work with an off-island funeral home if you want to be buried on Nantucket? Do you have to take the body off of Nantucket and then bring it back?
Quite often you do, and that's created quite a few logistical problems, obviously, in the winter especially. But a number of Cape funeral homes in particular have been working very closely with the island, with the houses of worship on the island, to make the transition as smooth as possible. Bodies are taken off island for embalming and for preparation, and then brought back in a timely fashion for burial in Nantucket cemeteries. It's working about as well as it can. These funeral homes, a couple of them have Some equipment and vehicles stationed here on the island so they can get their staff members back and forth more quickly. They don't have to wait for the slow boat to go back and forth. Obviously, the intent is to make a time like this as smooth and as easy as possible when people are grieving and families have so many other concerns to worry about.
All right, let's talk about the Moby Dick Readathon. This is coming up this weekend. I do know that Dan Tridel will be over there participating on the island in the Moby Dick Readathon. What is that event? How does it work? When's it happen, Josh?
Sure. Dan will be reading, as will I. Dan's reading a little bit earlier in the day. I guess he can't stay up quite as late. He's got that morning show to do.
What are the times?
Around 11 o'clock at night. This is my third straight year. I've done it every year. It's really a really cool event for Nantucket and for anyone who appreciates classic literature, classic American literature. The way it basically works is starting at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning at the Nantucket Athenaeum, Nat Philbrick, the National Book Award winner, who's also written a short book called Why Read Moby Dick, will kick off a 24-hour-plus reading of every chapter, every word of Melville's Moby Dick. It will move to the Whaling Museum of the Nantucket Historical Association for a while and then come back and finish up at the Athenaeum sometime around midday or a little bit earlier on Sunday. Community members, several dozen of them, will read chapters or sections of the book continuously at the Whaling Museum and the Athenaeum. And it's really, I don't use the word magical very often, but to sit up on the stage in the Great Hall of the Athenaeum where people like Frederick Douglass and Emerson and Thoreau have spoken, and in the middle of the night with a few dozen people out in the audience reading the words of Herman Melville in Nantucket, which is such a part, an integral part of the novel, is really very moving experience. I really enjoy doing it.
Well, that really is cool, and we can add Tridel and Balling to that list of greats. Josh Balling can be followed on Twitter at jballingim for Inquirer and Mirror. Josh, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And in the Woods Hole studio with me is George Brennan from the Cape Cod Times and Cape Cod Online. One of the stories in the Times this week, George, is about great white sharks. We love talking about great whites. We have an interest in them here, certainly because they're so prevalent now in our region. And they've found out some interesting things about how long these great white sharks live. I guess they thought it was only maybe 20 years or so, and now they know and that's not the case.
That's right. Research being done right here in Woods Hole shows now that these very large animals are living 80 years. 80 years is the possible life expectancy of a great white shark.
And so that's a lot more baby sharks that they can have over that period of time?
That's right. But one of the concerns that's raised in this particular story is that reproduction doesn't start until later. So if great whites are killed, whether it be by accident or, they're fished somehow, it could cause great whites to become extinct quicker because it does take that – there's that long period where they're not giving birth yet and reproducing. And so there is concern among scientists as a result of that. Pretty fascinating the way that they figured out how old these great whites are. I'm not going to pretend to be able to tell you all the science even after reading this story, but it has to do with looking at the vertebrae of deceased great whites, actually cutting them open and looking at them. It's just fascinating.
Yeah, I guess they can look at the bones and the vertebrae, cut them in half, and look at them almost like they're looking at tree rings. And I guess the vertebrae is kind of affected by how much radioactivity is in the environment at that time and that sort of thing. So it gives them definite markers about when specific things were happening and when this fish was around or whether it was or wasn't.
That's right.
It's a fascinating article. Go to Cape Cod Online. Who wrote that one?
Doug Fraser wrote it. Yeah.
Doug Fraser wrote that. Okay, let's move on to the next story. We've been following this. The theft of oysters. I think we had two big thefts this past year.
That's maybe? Right. Yep.
And it looks like they're about to make an arrest.
Huge mystery here. This had been going on, and more than $40,000 in oysters were stolen in East Dennis and Barnstable last summer. They weren't they weren't able to catch them. They put up cameras, thinking that they might be able to catch people, and none of it was working. And but they do have someone in mind. They're not saying yet. Rather than because it's different district courts involved here, rather than arrest the person, what they're doing is bringing the evidence before a grand jury for and looking for a grand jury indictment, which would raise this up crime up to a Barnstable Superior Court level crime that increases the potential penalty for whoever this person is. So we don't know who it is yet. Police certainly say they do, and their months long investigation. This has been going on for 5 months. Wrapping up.
And what was really interesting is that there's a quote in there from one of the police officers about who was getting the oysters, because we knew someone stole the oysters, but what were they doing with them?
Right, and he says we ought to be concerned about that, and but and he doesn't really
it'll be
elaborate.
No, I know. He says it'll be a big surprise when people find out who is getting these oysters. So it sounds like there was some good police work there to at least find a suspect who I guess they're going to be charging soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to talk to Nelson Siegelman from the Martha's Vineyard Times.